Hi, this is Paul Goldschmidt, and it's game day.
It's the Cards and Cubs tonight. Ameren Total Access, 620. First pitch, 7:15.
Let's play ball.
On your voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
We go to the celebrity guest line right now, where we are joined by CBS military analyst, Colonel Jeff McCausland, joining us here on KMOX. Hello, Colonel.
Hey, it's a great pleasure with you guys. How are you doing?
Well, good. So we had the big celebration in Washington, D.C. yesterday and this week, celebrating 75 years of NATO partnership. It's probably the strongest it's been since World War II. What did we accomplish at the summit this week?
Well, I think we accomplished a number of things. Obviously, many of these things were pre-planned for the announcement during the summit. First of all, this was a meeting of 38 leaders, not only the NATO partners, also bringing in a new member, that being Sweden. But we had several Asian leaders show up to demonstrate that NATO has an interest and responsibilities in the Asia-Pacific region and to show that particular relationship, you know, by their presence. So we had leaders from New Zealand, Australia, Korea, and Japan as well for the summit, and of course, President Zelensky from Ukraine. With respect to Ukraine, of course, there was announcements about more air defense systems to go to Ukraine in response to the relentless missile attacks by Russia. And at the onset of the summit, of course, we had this unbelievably tragic event whereby the Russians launched a missile which struck a pediatric hospital in Kyiv, killing several young patients in the process, underscoring not only the overall aggression by the Russian Federation, but the need for more air defense. New NATO headquarters now to be established to better coordinate aid to Ukraine. A senior NATO officer and staff to be in Ukraine to facilitate aid and as well as training of Ukrainian forces. A pledge of €40 billion to Ukraine for the coming year for defense spending. As well as the final two announcements was in the language of the communique, the statement, irreversible path for Ukraine to eventual membership. And Ukraine was not offered membership, but came about as close as it can get in terms of what the prediction is for the future. And then last but not least, the announcement of F-16s will be delivered as we speak to the Ukraine to bolster their defense against the Russian aggression. So all that, I think, as well as a demonstration of unity, was what this particular summit was all about.
Yeah, just as a quick aside extension of that, the F-16s, I know they were authorized some time ago here in the U.S., and there was a training component involved. Do we know, have the Russian pilots now been adequately trained to operate those F-16s?
Well, the Ukrainian pilots have been trained to operate the F-16, for sure. They have been involved in training in several NATO countries. The aircraft will come from Holland and Denmark. The real challenge, I think, that has to also be taken care of, and hopefully this was being worked on as well in the previous months, is where, in fact, you're going to base these particular aircraft, because obviously once they arrive, that'll be a very priority target for Russian missile attacks. And number two, how you maintain those particular aircraft, which, you know, demand an awful lot of maintenance on the ground. And there has been some talk of perhaps allowing contractors from whatever countries to be present in Ukraine to facilitate the maintenance of F-16s and other, you know, advanced technological weapon systems that the U.S. has been providing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about the fact that they're going to be a military target wherever they're based. That does make the equation a little more complicated. I want to talk about NATO generally, because there's this rhetoric going out from Donald Trump that countries aren't paying their fair share, and they're not paying up, and the U.S., as he said, paying 100%, when none of that is true. But there's this impression that's been created that there's some bank account out there where all these countries that are members of NATO are putting money into, and that they're not putting their fair share in. That's not what the issue really is, right? It has to do with their defense spending in their domestic countries.
Yeah, that's absolutely 110% correct. And the American people, when they vote in November on this one issue, how we feel about NATO, how we feel about Europe, how we feel about Ukraine, the difference between the two candidates could not be more stark. Now, there are a whole bunch of other issues, but on this issue, it's about as clear as you can get. Donald Trump has said he would halt military assistance to Ukraine, number one. Number two, he has very speciously said, well, he would end the war in one day. That's obviously totally untrue. Second of all, he has been very skeptical about NATO for many, many years, and some of his leading officials from his previous administration, all of whom, by the way, will not support his reelection. Most notably, John Bolton, his national security advisor, has said if elected, Trump would pull us out of the alliance. And again, Mr. Biden is just the opposite. He has continued to argue for military assistance to Ukraine as long as it takes. He has argued for a stronger NATO, an expanded NATO, now with two new countries since he became president, with Finland and Sweden, and defending NATO territory, as he likes to say, every square inch. In terms of payments, again, Mr. Trump, it's surprising, having been president, somehow he never was learned how this all works, but there's no NATO fund. There's a very, very small NATO fund of a few million dollars, which maintains the headquarters in Brussels and pays the light bill. Yeah, and every country contributes a very small amount of money to that, but that's a tiny fraction of defense spending. What we're talking about is each country spending 2% of their gross domestic product on their own forces for their own defense, and then, of course, the possibility of pooling those resources when the alliance as a whole was attacked. That's what this is all about.
Exactly.
And there has been a goal, and it's not a requirement, it's a goal that was established by the alliance back in 2014, that members would hit that 2% target within 10 years. And by the end of this year, that 10-year goal, 23 countries that appear out of 32 will, in fact, meet that goal of 2% of GDP. Now, should those other countries, one good example, Canada, has not reached that goal, should they do that? Absolutely. And should we be relentless in being asking them to do that? Absolutely, without question. But there's no doubt about that there's been a dramatic improvement. When Mr. Biden came into office, about 9 of the 23 met that 2% goal. Now we're at 23 of 32 meeting that particular goal. Many of them obviously motivated not only by the urging of President Biden, but by the ongoing war in Ukraine, for sure. But that is really what this is all about. And oh, by the way, that dramatic increase in defense spending that they have done over the last 2 years, in light largely of the invasion of Ukraine, has resulted in about two-thirds of the additional spending being right here in the United States. So about $140 billion in European defense spending over the last 2 years has been contracts with American industries to purchase aircraft, tank ammo, tanks, HIMARS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to the benefit of American industry.
Colonel, the NATO meetings yesterday had the undertone of what we're dealing with our presidential election, and that is the age of President Biden and the fear that Donald Trump may win the presidency again. A lot of the European and NATO allies are concerned about that, and there's been this talk of true Trump-proofing NATO. Was that really going on?
Well, they've been talking about that for quite a period of time, ever since Mr. Trump announced for re-election, quite candidly. I've been in Europe several times, and I've talked to leading people I know over there, and they are very concerned about that. And that is why we're seeing, I think, in part, systematic increase in defense spending, number one, and talk of greater coordination internally between NATO members, not only in terms of defense, but also in terms of how they better, frankly, rationalize their defense industries. You know, at the end of the Cold War, it was not only a reduction in defense spending and armaments that occurred, but it was a wholesale reduction in defense industries. And the ability for them to ramp that up over 2 years has been really the problem. They can purchase weapons or whatever, if you will, from around the world, but building their own industries back in place to maintain that capacity in Europe and better coordinating it amongst themselves so each country's not building their own tank or their own airplane or whatever is really what they need to try to do, I think, going into the future.
He may be my favorite guest that we have on here.
Oh,
the
voice you're too of Saint Louis.
No, I'm not kidding.
I'm a Cubs fan. Come on, man.
I know you're a Cubs fan. That's why I said you might be. But he might be my favorite guest. Jeff McCausland, it's always great to get your insight and wisdom. You're so on point, and you keep us informed, and you make us look smart. So we appreciate you.